Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Mind Tripping with Michelle, the show where you can explore the inherent powers of your mind, learn how to change and shift your personal energy, and finally release any blocks that keep you from having the life that you want to have. I'm your host, Michelle Malio, and today is Monday, March 16th, 2015. Happy pre-St. Patty's Day. I am broadcasting today from the new studio, so I do have a green screen behind me. However, you'll see my new studio behind me, hopefully, if we get that going. If not, bear with us. So I can't wear any green, because then it will go invisible. That's my point. Today, I'm honored to introduce to you my co-host, Robin Cragen. Robin is a dear friend. She is my show producer. She is my lifesaver. And she's also a fellow psychic. So welcome, Robin. Hi, how are you today?
Hi, Michelle. I'm doing great. How are you?
I am doing fantastic. Just getting over a little bit of a cold. But, you know, things are just really starting to kick in for 2015 for me.
Awesome. Really good. Did you have a good weekend?
I had a wonderful weekend. It was my birthday weekend. So I got to, you know, last weekend I got to go to, my husband brought me, we're motorcycle riders, so he brought me to Daytona. And then this weekend we took another motorcycle ride. I got tons of cool gifts. And it was a fun time. I feel like I'm 27 again.
Awesome.
How was your weekend?
Mine was good. We stayed busy this weekend, so went touring in a couple of places that we haven't been since moving to Louisiana. So that was interesting. It was really fun.
Oh, great. Well, That's good. And you and I had spoke before the show, and I know you're exploring the spiritual community out there. So I think that's very exciting. I'm loving to hear all about your adventures and all the new spiritual people that you're meeting out that way.
It's very different, I got to tell you. It's a lot of different personalities, different just all around the atmosphere is different here. So it's not a challenge. It's really exciting, and I'm looking forward to learning new things.
Oh, awesome. It's so cool. It's amazing how different cultures, even just in the United States, just can be so unique and almost like learning something completely new.
Yes. Yes, and I totally got an earful yesterday, so I'm still trying to process it all.
You're like, huh, what? And you're in the land of, dare I say, hoodoo and voodoo.
Yes, I am. Very much so. Yes, I am.
That's so cool. I have some news. I will be moving to North Carolina in the next So I'm really excited to learn about the spiritual practices out there as opposed to Florida. I know when I came to Florida, it was a big spiritual culture shock for me coming from Massachusetts, the home of, you know, witches and Salem and witchcraft, where it's very open conversation to talk about your spiritual beliefs based on that. And I got here in Florida and people were like, oh, no. We're spiritualists, you know, it's just a little bit more taboo to talk about, so that was really interesting.
Yeah, here it's open, it's out, people like to talk about it, and even the different church beliefs also have different mystics mixed in with them, so it was very, very interesting to go to a picnic yesterday and get to talk to the different personalities and what everybody's into and what they want to learn, and it's gonna be fun. It's gonna be a lot of fun.
That's so cool. Well, I'll tell you, I'm really excited about today's guest. Her name is Nina Bingham, And Nina is an author. She is a life coach, and she's a clinical hypnotherapist. She's inspiring, sincere, and wholehearted, very patient also, I have to add. She educates not only from her academic knowledge, but she shares from her own hard-won life experience in a new and profound way. A life coach and clinical hypnotherapist since 2003, she has treated individuals and couples with a variety of issues. And I'm really excited because she's written a book. She's authored many books, but today we're going to be talking about her brand new book, Once the Storm is Over. But she is the author of 3 books of poetry and 1 recovery workbook, Never Enough, her 5th book, Once the Storm is Over. I'm halfway through it, From Grieving to Healing After the Suicide of My Daughter, was published March 2015, which is this month. And it's the autobiographical confession of a mental health professional who lost her teen daughter to suicide when she learned about love and forgiveness and how it changed her life forever. And I believe it will change yours too. What do you think? Hi, Nina. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, ladies. I'm so excited to be with you today. Good morning. Or good afternoon, where you guys are. And you know, Michelle, you said that I'm patient. I don't know why on earth you said that, because I think you're the patient one. my power was knocked out in a winter storm, and I was supposed to be on your show. And my alarm didn't wake me, and I snoozed through the interview, and I was supposed to be on. And so you are gracious enough to have me on the second time. So I just want to thank you for that. You are the patient one.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you. I believe it's that I put so much on my plate, I appear patient, because by the time I can get back to you, it looks like I'm being extremely patient.
Well, we'll both give ourselves credit for being a little bit patient.
I love it. Well, welcome to the show. It's an honor to have you here, finally, and I'm loving your book, loving it. I'm halfway through. I lost a younger sister many years ago. We're going on, over 20 years now, and I know for my family, you know, to watch my mom go through losing a sister was difficult for me, and watch my mom and to not really have any resources, I think that it's really a valuable tool that you're providing to the people out there. So congratulations. I'm really, really happy for you.
Thank you. I'm really excited about we just launched the book March 1st. So, you know, it's still just getting out there into people's hands. But the response I'm getting is just really heart-touching for me. And you know, I'm so glad that I took the 14 months that it took to write it and just sort of document my story, document my journey through grief and sort of back to life again. The 14 months that I was writing was at times very painful. It was also very cathartic because, you know, journaling is really the way I started out with the book. This was not an intentional book. Like, I didn't sit down and say, okay, I'm going to write about my experience, you know, as a suicide survivor or recovering from grief. I mean, it wasn't like that at all. I just started journaling because I had seen a psychologist because I felt like I needed, you know, I reached out to another mental health professional because I felt like I really needed that professional support. And because I was really struggling, you know, I was struggling with a tremendous load of guilt and shame. And so I reached out finally after... Seriously, Michelle, after a year of struggle, you know, I mean, am I a hardhead? You know, I know better, right? Because I'm a mental health professional and I tell clients, reach out for support. And here it took me a year to get beyond my own guilt, my own shame, and reach out. But when I finally reached out to this psychologist, you know, one of the things he first said to me is he said, well, Nina, you're a writer. Why don't you just start journaling about your real feelings? You know, just really begin uncensored to journal about how it feels to be in your shoes. And so I just started writing, and, you know, 14 months later I had this book, and it was a painful process to go through because anytime you're writing and journaling, you're having to relive, in a sense, a lot of what happened. But it also gave me a tremendous perspective of what things I did well as a parent and then things which I wish I had done differently. And that 14-month process really allowed me to begin to heal. You know, that was the starting point of the healing. So although it was difficult to write the book, at the same time now that I'm on the other side and I'm hearing from suicide survivors and I'm hearing from people who are grief survivors and who are trying to recover from a loss, whether that's the loss of a child or a loss of a partner or even loss of a pet, you know, all these losses that we go through, it's all worth it. It's all worth it, you know, on this other side.
That's awesome. That's amazing. And I agree with you 100% that it is a process and it is worth it on the other side. But for many, and you as well, in your book, you share where you almost get stuck in it. Get stuck in that in stages, and a lot of people think too. And I know I'm jumping around here, but I think a lot of people think that you go through those stages of grief and then you're all done. You know, phew, I made it. But we do tend to bounce around in those stages and go back and forth and between the anger, the denial, the bargaining, and even going to acceptance and then going back into the anger again. So. What is the message of this book? Is that I found that was the message for me, but what is the message that you are really trying to portray in your story?
Well, let me just rewind to kind of what the book synopsis for people who haven't read it, and then, you know, I'll talk about what I think the message is or what I hope the message is. So my daughter's name was Mariah, and she took her life in June of 2013 as I was sleeping in the next room. And we discovered her the next morning. And it was like a tornado made landfall. And it just shook me. It shook all of us to our core. Fiance at the time and I were shattered. My family was devastated. Mariah's friends were inconsolable. She didn't tell a soul. I mean, she was extremely close to a boyfriend that she'd had for 3 years, and she didn't mention anything to him. None of her friends had any idea this was going to happen. And so, yeah, so it was just completely, it wasn't completely out of the blue because she had suffered from a severe depression for 4 years, since the age of 11. And my family has a history of depression, starting with my grandmother, who was institutionalized with it. And then it came down to my father, who had bipolar disorder, what used to be called manic depression. And he became an alcoholic to kind of self-medicate, you know, and became abusive because of that. And then, you know, the family gene is very genetic, depression is, and so it came to me. I have to take a pill every day, or I would probably lay in bed and never get out of bed. So it's very genetic. I have it. And then it was passed to my daughter. And so at the age of 11, when her father died, she developed severe depression. And, of course, I believe it was genetic because you see this, you know, the gene just coming through the family line so clearly. But we never imagined in a million years that she would resort to this, because she had a family who loved her. She had a mother who loved her. She had, you know, at the time, a stepmom who loved her. She had a boyfriend who adored her and friends. And, you know, and it wasn't like she was disengaged. That's the other thing that's interesting about her story, is that, you know, she was in choir. She was working at the Red Cross, and she was the class president for the Red Cross representative. She was on the dance team, you know, and she'd stay after and, you know, hang out with friends. So it wasn't like she was completely unsocial. She was a very quiet girl, and I think that's the thing that one of the markers, one of the things you need to look for in teens and young adults, is if they're a very quiet child, these are the kids who kind of get ignored in class because not paid enough attention to. In class, the teachers don't notice those kids because they're not screaming for attention. You know, it's the quiet kids who are withdrawn that you have to keep an eye on. And she was one of those kids, you know. But she was engaged. You know, she wasn't completely unengaged. She was engaged. But she just was not sharing the things that were going on in her head. And it wasn't until we found her diary. We found a diary, and in the diary, you know, we were shocked to find out what her thoughts were. You know, her mind had gone completely. She was very ill. And I don't think I understood that, and I don't think anybody around her understood how really ill she was until we found her diary. And then we also found that she had an eating disorder that she'd been hiding from us. We found in her diary she had, you know, food diaries, and she had a scale that she'd been hiding, and she had diuretics in a room that she'd gotten over the internet with money she had earned, you know, housekeeping and things like this from her grandma and I. We had no idea that she was doing this. We had no idea until, it wasn't until, I had no idea that she was using diuretics at home until, because she wasn't vomiting, she wasn't doing that. She just was using laxatives, you know, and getting them over the internet and going to our mailbox and getting them as soon as they came. So I had no clue she was doing this, you know. Yeah. And here I am, I'm a therapist, I'm a counselor. I have people in my practice who have eating disorders, who have bulimia. I understand bulimia nervosa and anorexia nervosa and you know, every kind of eating disorder there is. I've written a book on it. But I had no idea. It was underneath my nose. So what I'm saying is, you know, I mean, it's about 30,000 to 40,000 people every year, just in the United States alone, commit suicide. That's as large as some large cities. Every 13.3 minutes, someone takes their life in the United States. So this is a huge problem in the U.S., and it can happen to anyone. I guess I have a message in this book, it's that it can happen to anyone. Mm-hmm. It can happen to counselors. It can happen to psychologists. It can happen to physicians, and it has. So it's not, suicide is not something that low-income people only experience, or you know, people without educations only experience. Mm-hmm. It happens in all socioeconomic levels. And so I guess if I do have a message, it would be that this truly can happen to anyone, Michelle.
Wow. That's a pretty bold message, but at the same time, I think it's nice because it doesn't really eliminate anyone from the lesson. Wow. And what impact has this, your daughter's suicide, had on you?
Well, like I said, for the first year, the impact, you know, for survivors, the parents, the spouses who are left to pick up the pieces, you just find yourself confused and hurt and angry. And I think for me, the belief in a benevolent God, because I'd always considered myself a spiritual person, was really rocked. And I think especially for us parents, when you lose a child to suicide, it feels like the ultimate rejection, you know. And so survivors have to deal with a tremendous load of guilt and shame. And there's a stigma, as you're well aware, attached to suicide. If, you know, it's like if you were a better parent, then this wouldn't have happened. Or, you know, if you had a happier marriage, this wouldn't have happened. Or if you'd been a better brother or sister and been there for them, this wouldn't have happened. There's a stigma attached to suicide. And there's a stigma attached, I think, just to any mental disorder, even depression that I have. You know, I was just so afraid, you know, in the past to come out to colleagues and let them know that I myself was suffering with depression. There's a stigma attached to all this. And so for me, in order to recover, Michelle, I had to let go of the guilt and the blame and begin to forgive myself. Mm-hmm. And that forgiveness was the most difficult task that I had. I think the most difficult task suicide survivors tackle is self-forgiveness. And for me, to heal has really meant to be able to live life free of the stigma of mental illness and free of the stigma of suicide, you know, to be free of the fear of being judged.
Mm-hmm. And do you feel there, or do you think that that's a constant, do you think that's still a constant battle for you, or do you think that you're there?
I think that I'm there. I think that I'm there now because I've talked about it so much. I've externalized it so much. Now I'm not ashamed anymore that I've had, you know, because this is what I understand now. And I would have told, I've told clients this throughout the years. I've been a life coach, mental health coach for 12 years. You know, I've seen hundreds of people who have mental illness from all walks of life, you know, rich, poor, male, female. I mean, mental health is no respecter of persons. And I would tell these people, I would tell them, you know, a mental illness is simply a brain problem. It's a neurological problem. It's a brain problem. It's a brain chemistry problem. Mm-hmm. And not to be ashamed of that. it's just like any other physical problem. It just happens to be the brain that's affected, right? And
right.
So I would always coach them, please remember that if you have to take a pill for it, obviously it's chemical, you know, because it's changing, that pill is changing the chemistry of your brain, your neurotransmitters, those chemicals in the brain. So it's obviously
mm-hmm.
physical, yes, if we have to take a pill for it, and it can change the chemistry of our brain, it's obviously physical. Yeah, it's chemical. So I would coach people like this, and yet there was so much shame around it for me because I'm working with mental health professionals who were all pretending, you know, to a certain degree.
Yeah.
We're all pretending that we're perfect. We're all pretending that we have the answers. We're all pretending that this doesn't touch our lives. And in fact, not only does it not just touch a lot, I think it touches a lot of mental health professionals that just won't come out of the closet with it, but I think it's touching their families as well. I think it's touching, you know, their children and then family members, but we're not talking about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not saying that. And so I think if there's the importance of this book, I think is to say, here's a mental health professional, you know, I have 2 degrees, psychology and a master's in mental health counseling, who after studying for 9 years, in fact, has depression and in fact struggles with that still and in fact has to take a pill for that and had a daughter who, you know, was predisposed to this, and the death of her father kindled that in her, right? It kindled that those symptoms, and she took her life. So this is a very important book just because it's showing, again, that this can happen to anyone.
Yeah, and you're also on the other side of it, so you really have walked your way out of the storm and to be able to help people. I feel like that's amazing to be able to say, hey, I've been here, and almost to hold your hand out and say, here's the way through.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if a mental health care professional is experiencing mental health symptoms themselves or has mm-hmm. a family member who is in crisis, what is your mm-hmm. advice for them?
Well, I think here's how we all get over the stigma of mental illness. We all have to do our own part. And that includes mental health professionals, and especially mental health professionals. If someone is a mental health professional listening to this today, what I want to say is the greatest impact you can have, the most important thing you can do, is that understand, number one, spiritually, I believe, you're given these things for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're given our trials in life for a reason. I believe it's not only so we can grow, but so we can help other people, we can comfort others. And that we could bring our knowledge. And I think to do that is to be honest with our colleagues about what's happening in our own lives, you know, what's happening, what our history has been, not to be ashamed of it. So to reach out, you know, to begin to talk about our own stuff with one another, to begin to say, you know, I just had this with a colleague, you know, I just had somebody come into the practice, you know, and then they're dealing with this. And you know what? I also have depression. It's in my family, and I have to deal with it too. So just to begin to come out of our mental health closets with one another, I think that's the most important thing we can do to start removing and lifting the stigma that's been so heavy over the years. You know, reach out. I mean, begin to talk about it with one another and begin to talk about it with our friends. Because I think once we understand that there's so many people, 26% of Americans have a diagnosed mental health issue. That's more than one out of every four people that you're going to meet has already been diagnosed, Michelle. That's not even the people who haven't come out of the closet yet or haven't faced it, you know, haven't gone to be been diagnosed. So if one out of every four, actually 26% is more than one out of every four people you meet, they're going to understand. It's just that we all need to really start talking about it. We need to have an honest conversation about it. And so that really applies for mental health professionals. And here's what I used to think. I used to think that I would be judged because of my history, my familial history with it, and my own, you know, the way it's overshadowed my life, that I would be judged, and so I hid it for so long. And now what I'm finding is just the opposite is true, is that people are more willing to talk to me now than they ever were before because I can understand. It's like finally they don't feel like I'm up on a pedestal anymore. They feel like I'm right down there with them, understanding and yet having some academic knowledge that I can share with them. So it's actually made my position with my clients more powerful than ever before.
That's amazing. And What wonderful advice. I think that's great advice that you can follow up with a success story to go with it. And I agree with you 100%. I think that I am honest to a fault sometimes, and mm-hmm. I guess it happens the way it happens, and we're supposed to be where we're supposed to be in any given moment. But I've even fallen in that same category sometimes where you're afraid of being judged, so you do hold back some information about yourself because, you know, mm-hmm. we're the professional. We're supposed to be perfect. You know, we're not supposed to have these problems. We're supposed to be able to help solve them. But really, in truth, the best way to solve a problem is to have walked through it. So,
yeah, and it's really, you know, I have a radio show as well once a month, and the producer of my radio show, one time she cracked me up because we were talking about, you know, this concept about, like, having to be perfect, that society, you know, wants us to be perfect people. It's trying to mold us into these perfect people, and you know, we were talking about that, and she's like, but I hate perfect people. She's like, you know, when I see a perfect person, I don't like them, I hate them. And I said, I know, and yet this is what society tells us we have to be, you know, it's perfect, and it's just not right. It just doesn't work, you know. It's like every time I've tried to be perfect, people can't relate to me. And when I'm real, then people really like me, and my clients relate to me better, and they're like, wow, you know, not only do you have some knowledge to share with me and some strategies to give me and some skills to equip me with, mm-hmm. but at the same time, you've been through this. You've been down this road. So you're speaking from experience. Man, I can relate to you. That's a very powerful place to come from.
Yes, it is. That's amazing. Wow. So, Rob, do you have any questions for Nina?
Yeah.
Are you back
there? I'm sorry. Both of you were speaking at the same time. What were you saying?
Oh, I was just asking if you have any questions for Nina. You've been so quiet back there. Are you napping?
Oh, no, we have a caller on hold that has been added to the show, if you would like to talk to her.
Oh, that would be wonderful. Would you like to take a caller, Nina?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Hello, you're on the air. Do you have a question for Nina? Hello? I guess not there.
Maybe just a listener that wants to hide in the background. Well, yeah.
That's fine. Robin, let me hear from you. So what question is that? You said you were reading my book earlier before we went on air. You said you started reading my book and you were getting into it and you really liked it. What do you like about it? I guess I have a question for you. What are you liking about it so far?
I like that it's real. It's not a made-up story. This is something that actually happened to a professional. And like you said, it was right under your nose and you didn't even see the warning signs or anything to tip you off about it. And to me, that is just heart-wrenching. I couldn't imagine having to go through that.
Yeah. Yeah, it can mm-hmm. happen to anybody. I mean, there were certainly signs, and there are signs to look for, you know, and I think it's important that if you have a teen or if you have a young adult, especially if they're depressed, okay, or if they're just moody, a lot. I think it's oftentimes with teenagers, right? It's hard to distinguish if they're just being moody, kind of, you know, angry, acting out teenagers, or if they're actually depressed. And I think I want to encourage the listeners to, if you have a teenager that's, you know, struggling, if you feel like they might be depressed or if they're withdrawing or if they're angry and acting out, I think it's important to get online and educate yourself on depression. And also on the signs and to look for in terms of suicide, because the number one killer of teens is suicide. So teens commit suicide faster than any other group. So I think it's extremely, because they are impetuous, they don't understand the impact that this is going to have on their loved ones. They don't think it through. It's interesting, we were talking about the brain earlier, neurologically. What's interesting to know about the brain and our children is that our brain isn't fully developed until about the age of between 21 and 23 years old. So the brain is still developing, and especially when they're teens, the last part of the brain to develop is the frontal lobe. And the frontal lobe is kind of like where your forehead is located. And the frontal lobe controls impulses. Impulse control is part of the frontal lobe, which is the very last part of the brain to develop. You know? So teens don't have that control mechanism completely developed within the brain yet. And this is why we're seeing such high incidences of teen and young adult suicide, because their brain hasn't fully developed and they're having a really difficult time controlling impulses. So if you have a teen like this that's impulsive or acting out or angry or depressed or withdrawn, I think, you know, you need to pay attention to that and try to educate yourself. There's tons of information about depression and suicide prevention online.
Wow. So what was the age again where the brain actually fully developed?
Well, I don't think it's, I've never seen any studies that give an exact age, but, you know, I think most neurologists feel that it's between the ages of 21 and 23.
Hmm. Wow. That's very interesting.
And that's why, you know, you see teens doing all this crazy stuff, right? They're more impetuous. They're more impulsive than other age groups, and it's just because the brain is still not developed yet. The frontal lobe is still developing.
Wow, well, that's good to know. So I just forgave myself for about 1,500 mistakes I made in my teen years.
Yes, me too.
That's amazing. And so you've already covered that, you know, what our listeners, you know, if they have a family member or friend who's struggling with a mental illness or suicide,
mm-hmm.
what can they do to support them on top of, you know, the kind of things to look for or understand?
First off, I would say, just based on my own story, looking back, things to do differently for me. I've got a whole laundry list of things I would have done differently. And I'm very, like Robin said, I think this book is really honest about that. I don't try to dress this up. I don't try to make myself look like a perfect parent, because I wasn't. I did get her help. I mean, she was on an antidepressant, and I had taken her to counseling many, 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 many times. So it wasn't as if I didn't intervene with her depression. It was just that... looking back, of course, you know, you look back, hindsight is 20/20. There are things that, you know, I wish I had done. I think one of them is I would have, I talk about, there was an incident where she self-harmed, that she burned herself at one point. And because at that time I was self-employed and I didn't have, I had very basic medical coverage for her, and this was the years that, you know, all the medical coverage was being cut back several years ago. And so her medical coverage at the time did not include counseling. I couldn't get counseling for her. And at the time, you know, I was a struggling single mom and I couldn't afford it. And so when she did self-harm, instead of whisking her away to the hospital, which is what I should have done looking back, but because I couldn't, you know, I couldn't afford to take her to the therapy that she needed, and I couldn't, you know, and I didn't have medical insurance that covered that, we just made a pact. You know, I made a promise that if it ever happened again, you know, that she would be taken to a hospital. And, I mean, she understood that, you know, and I felt like that incident was over. But looking back now, I wish I had gotten her in the car and said, we're going right now. And
wow.
So there's so many things that it was like, so many things looking back that I could have done differently, but I think the one thing I would say to parents is that even when teenagers are directing their anger at you, which she certainly was. She was very grieved over the death of her father, and she was taking that out on me as a parent and directing all that anger at me. Even when they're angry, even when they're refusing, even when they're acting out, don't be intimidated by that. Because it can be very intimidating, because you don't want to push too hard as a parent, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But at the same
time, you don't push them away.
Right. You know, you don't want to alienate them. You don't want to lose their love. And I think that was the major problem with me. I didn't want to lose her love. And, you know, her whole, from the age of 11 to 15, which is 4 years, we had battled because she never wanted to go to counseling. And I had drug her to counseling 4 different times. And, you know, we were always battling over the counseling issue. And finally I got her on antidepressants. And, you know, so it wasn't like I didn't intervene. It was just that I wish now that I had pushed even harder than I did. That's what I would say to parents. Don't be intimidated. Don't let them intimidate you.
Wow. Well, Nina, you know, my camera person has just informed me that we have gone over, unfortunately, on our Blog Talk show. The rest of this interview will show up on Google and the YouTube. But so we won't be able to get this to our Blog Talk listeners, but for YouTube and for Google Plus, could you please tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you if they would like, or where they can purchase your book?
Yeah, sure. So if they're interested in the book, you go to the book website. It is www.oncethestormisover.com. And you can see the book trailer and read the reviews there. You can also go, I have a mental health blog, which I hope the listeners will check out, because there's tons of grief recovery information there, suicide prevention, and just my own journey through grief. And I'm journaling it all and putting it on the blog. So that's www.ninabingham.blogspot.com. And then I also have, I'm a life coach, and I do grief recovery work, and I'm also a clinical hypnotherapist. And so you can check out. Also offering webinars this year, which is really fun. I'm partnering with some really powerful alternative healthcare healers for that. So you can check that out on www.living-enlightened.com.
Awesome. I'll also have these listed so that our viewers, people that view or listen at a later date, can easily get to them. Nina, I'd like to really thank you from the bottom of my heart for coming on the show. I think that your book is fabulous. I think that I'm just honored to be in your presence, and that you took the time out to just share your experience from such a raw, deep level. And for that, you know, thank you so much. And thank you for being on the show.
Thank you, Michelle. It was an honor. I'm glad we got to connect.
Me too. So that was Nina Bingham, and her book is Once the Storm is Over. I do apologize that we went a little bit over on the Blog Talk, so our ending will be cut off. You know, we're still working out the bugs. The good news is that I no longer put on my productions completely on my own, and now we're a team with Robin and myself, and I have this really wonderful camera person who. Well, you may see her in video. When I do the move to North Carolina, she probably won't be coming along. Maybe I can get her to come. I don't know. Come on, pop your head in and say hi. Thank you to Melena. She does a great job. She's the future superstar of the show. So, Robin, what do you think? Nina, huh? Amazing book.
Yes, I can't imagine. I mean, I tear up just thinking that could happen at any time and not even realize it. And it just is, like I said earlier, it's heart-wrenching for me to even think of such an awful thing to have to try and live through. I mean, we shouldn't outlive our children. I mean, it just hurts. Yeah.
And for her to be, for Nina to be so, just, my heart, I really mean how honored I am, because for her to just be so raw and dig so deep to share that, mm-hmm. I think that, because there's been a lot of occasions where, you know, as a parent, we worry about you know, we just worry and worry and worry and worry that the worst is going to happen, or, you know, our children get so upset and sometimes threaten, you know, I don't know about you with your children, but, you know, oh my goodness, maybe it would just be better if I was gone. And you don't really know how to respond. You're almost walking around on eggshells, like afraid to push that child away. So her story is incredible, and it is one that can help in many different ways, I believe. I believe it can help the reader if they have a teen child that is struggling with chemical depression and where to go from there. It can also help the parent or the family member of someone who has committed suicide due to it. And it can also help, you know, just kind of understand the mental health community, understanding that, you know, it's really okay for us to share our experiences because I think it makes us human.
Yeah, I can't wait to finish the book and see how she progresses through it and the steps that she takes to get herself through what she went through, because it's just totally amazing that
this
book because of it, you know, and I'm just speechless about it. She's amazing.
She really is. I'll tell you what, I'm not going to give a spoiler alert, but this is a spoiler alert. I'm not going to give away the whole, but I was really excited, I have to tell you, and I know you will be too when you hear this. And I don't think you've read this far yet, but I'm going to tell you anyway. There's a point in time in Nina's life, and I think before, you know, she consulted a spiritual consultant, had psychic readings, and so this woman was a close friend, or, you know, somebody that she had worked with for a while. But so she got a message from her daughter from a psychic medium, and you know, Robin and I were both psychic mediums. So how exciting is that? And she gets a lot of, I want to say it feels to me like it's almost her first step towards walking through that storm.
Yes. I haven't gotten that far, so that's what I'm looking forward to finding out through her story.
Yes, cool. It's really cool. Once the storm is over, I'm going to share that. Of course, you know, I can't help it. I'm a psychic junkie. We've got to go into psychic land. So maybe you and I could share with our viewers how coming to a medium, you know, if you are in an unfortunate situation where you have lost somebody, not just to suicide, but, you know, lost a loved one and you're having a really tough time getting past it and you're looking for closure and you're blaming yourself. And also maybe we can talk about, you know, when it's too much, when you've crossed the line and when it's more of a hindrance. What do you think?
Yeah, we can do that. Yeah, a lot of people are looking for that sort of thing recently. So it would be a good thing for us to talk about, to try and see if that is something that someone should seek out or maybe not.
Mm-hmm. And that, let me ask you this. Have you had a client come to you where you really feel that your messages from the other side have been helpful towards their progress of moving through the stages of grief?
Absolutely. I think a lot of what we do is part of the healing process. They want to know that the person that passed over or took their own life or whatever the case may be of why they are where they are, they want to know that they're okay and that they are at peace and that they are whole and that they are thriving on the other side. And all of that is part of a huge healing process for someone who is going through that. So, yes, I absolutely believe that's true, that we do help people that way.
I agree. I've had many occasions. I've had more occasions than not where it's been extremely helpful for the person. And you know, please know that, you know, when you're receiving messages, a lot of people think that they can just, you know, sit down and say, hey, you know, can you ring up so-and-so? I want to see how they're doing, you know. And it's really